Imagine for a second that you live inside a massive ancient fortress. You know, you've got these towering stone walls, heavy iron gates, maybe even a moat.
Right, the classic impenetrable castle.
Exactly. And for years, you felt completely safe, completely secure, and totally isolated from the outside world. But suddenly, you know, you realize the stones are becoming way too expensive to maintain.
Yeah, the economics just stopped making sense.
Right. The gates are rusting open. And worst of all, you find out someone figured out a way to just duplicate your keys without ever touching the actual locks.
Which is terrifying, I mean, because the illusion of impenetrable security just vanishes overnight.
It really does. What happens when the digital walls we've built to protect our multi-billion-dollar industries and, you know, our most private personal data suddenly just stop working?
Well, we're watching the foundation of how we interact with technology fundamentally crack.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are exploring a massive stack of articles and research from the July 3, 2026 TechIn Night Tech Roundup. And our mission for you today is to unpack a massive industry-wide shift happening right under our noses.
Yeah, we're really looking at the total collapse of traditional walled gardens.
Exactly. Whether it's the end of video game console exclusivity, the death of physical media, or the alarming new ways hackers are completely bypassing our most trusted digital security barriers, the old models are breaking down. Okay, let's unpack this.
It's a profound shift. And, you know, while the video game industry and government cybersecurity might seem like they exist in entirely different universes, they are currently suffering from the exact same fundamental problem.
Which is what exactly?
Basically, the economics and the architecture of the past simply do not work in today's digital reality.
Let's start with the gaming side of this, specifically the console market, because, I mean, the math here is entirely broken at this point.
Oh, absolutely broken.
We are looking at an existential crisis driven by soaring prices and shrinking audiences. Just look at the hardware right now. The PS5 Pro is launching at $700.
Right, which is just a staggering price point.
It is. And the Xbox Series S, which remember was heavily marketed as the budget entry-level console, is now $499. That is the exact same price the PS5 Digital Edition launched at just a few years ago.
It really highlights how the traditional console business model is fracturing. I mean, historically, companies like Sony and Microsoft operated on a loss leader model.
Meaning they take a hit on the hardware.
Exactly. They would sell their hardware at a loss or maybe a very minimal profit just to get the physical box into your living room. Then they would recoup that money through software sales and subscription fees over the next, 5 to 7 years.
But that equation requires hardware components to gradually drop in price over time, right?
Yes, which is usually how technology works. But we are in a unique historical bottleneck right now.
Because of the AI boom.
Right. We are in the middle of a massive AI chip shortage that analysts actually predict will last through at least 2030. Semiconductor manufacturers, the foundries actually fabricating the silicon, are prioritizing highly profitable AI chips over gaming chips.
Wow, so the gaming companies are just getting squeezed out.
Yeah, and add to that the sheer complexity of modern gaming hardware. We aren't just talking about basic processors anymore.
No, we're talking about what? Advanced 7-nanometer and 5-nanometer fabrication processes?
Exactly. Plus those blazing fast NVMe solid-state drives and the incredibly complex ray tracing GPUs required to render modern lighting. The physical manufacturing cost has simply become too expensive for Sony or Microsoft to subsidize.
It really makes me think about how we actually consume entertainment now, especially when you look at the demographic data in the sources.
Oh, the demographic shift is massive.
Yeah, I mean, buying a $600 or $700 console today feels a bit like buying a grand piano.
A grand piano. I like that analogy.
Well, think about it. You need a dedicated room for it, you need a high-end TV to hook it up to, and you have to carve out dedicated time to just sit there and use it.
Right, it's an event.
Exactly. Meanwhile, mobile gaming is like having a harmonica in your pocket. You just pull it out wherever you are. When you look at Gen Z and younger audiences, they overwhelmingly prefer mobile platforms like Roblox and Fortnite.
That grand piano analogy is a perfect way to visualize the friction. For young people who are juggling school, work, and these very fluid social lives, mobile gaming fits their lifestyle effortlessly.
Yeah, they don't want to be tethered to a TV.
Right. The idea of buying expensive, stationary, single-purpose hardware, is as foreign to them as, say, buying a dedicated MP3 player would have been a decade ago.
But wait, let me push back on that for a second. Fine. What about the 30 and 40-somethings? I mean, millennials and Gen X grew up on these consoles.
True.
We have the disposable income now. Isn't there still a massive market of nostalgic, hardcore gamers who are more than willing to pay these premium prices for a high-end experience?
Well, that hardcore market absolutely exists. But what's fascinating the data here is the scale. The install base isn't growing proportionally to sustain the escalating costs of the industry.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, industry expectations were that we'd see well over 200 million next-gen consoles sold by this point in the life cycle.
Mm.
But the reality, it's hovering around 120 to 130 million combined.
That's a massive shortfall.
It is. When manufacturing costs are at an all-time high, and your primary audience is aging out without being fully replaced by the next generation, you just can't rely on that old loss leader model anymore.
And when that hardware math breaks, the business moat basically has to evaporate. Because making these games is getting unimaginably expensive, publishers are being forced to abandon their most sacred tradition, which is platform exclusivity.
It's a matter of pure survival for them at this point.
We see this perfectly with the massive leak from the ESRB, the Software Ratings Board. They accidentally revealed that Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine is coming to the PS5 and the unannounced Nintendo Switch 2 as the Mastercrafted Edition.
Which is huge news.
It's wild. Think about this. This game launched in September 2025 as a strict PC and Xbox exclusive. It was a massive hit. It sold over 3 million copies. And now, less than a year later, Microsoft is breaking exclusivity, bringing all its DLC, PvP modes, and co-op missions to rival platforms.
This is where we have to look at the brutal economic reality of modern game development. Building a AAA game today costs anywhere from $100 to $200 million just for development.
Good grief.
Yeah, and often another $50 to $100 million for global marketing. So let's say a game costs $150 million total. To just break even, they need to sell around 5 million copies at full price.
And you just can't do that if you're only selling to people who own one specific box.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot reliably hit those numbers on a single platform that only has 60 to 80 million active users. The math demands that you access the combined 200 plus million user base across all platforms to turn a profit. Exclusivity is a luxury of a cheaper era.
Which explains the sheer panic and anxiety spreading through development studios right now. I mean, there were wild rumors recently that Obsidian Entertainment, the universally beloved RPG developer who made Fallout New Vegas and the upcoming 2026 title Avowed, might face closure.
Right, which caused quite a stir online.
It did. Now, Bloomberg's Jason Schreier confirmed they are safe, but the fact that the industry immediately believed the rumor tells you everything about the current climate. I mean, Microsoft literally just shuttered Tango Gameworks and Arcane Austin to cut costs after spending $80 billion acquiring their parent companies.
It's brutal.
As a consumer, Microsoft's strategy is incredibly confusing right now. They oscillate between hoarding all these exclusive studios and massive acquisitions and then frantically porting everything everywhere to recoup the cash.
Well, it reflects a massive corporation caught directly between two eras. The walls of exclusivity are crumbling because the financial reality demands it. But, you know, while Microsoft and Sony are desperately rushing toward a frictionless, digital-only, cross-platform future to save money, one company is doing the exact opposite to capture an abandoned market.
Yes. Enter Nintendo. While everyone else is ditching physical media, Nintendo is stubbornly doubling down.
Yeah, they really are.
Sony is slated to cease PlayStation disc production entirely by 2028, and Xbox's Project Helix is heavily rumored to be totally digital only. And you can see why publishers love this transition. Digital sales hit roughly 80% of the market by 2025.
It's a publisher's dream, really.
Oh, absolutely. With digital, they have zero manufacturing costs, zero shipping logistics, no secondhand used game market eating into their profits, and total unyielding control over the price.
The corporate arguments for digital are definitely compelling, and, you know, proponents from the sources also point to the environmental benefits.
Like less plastic waste.
Right. Less plastic, lower carbon emissions from global shipping networks. Plus, there's a technical argument that modern discs are often just physical license keys anyway.
Yeah, you put the disc in and immediately have to download a massive 50 gigabyte day one patch just to make the code playable.
Exactly. But if you look at the downside, this shift represents the total loss of true ownership.
Buying a digital game feels less like a purchase and more like a long-term rental. The publisher can just revoke it at any time if a server shuts down or a music licensing agreement expires. Not to mention, this shift is causing an absolute existential crisis for physical retailers like GameStop. So what does this all mean? Is Nintendo just being hopelessly nostalgic by sticking to physical cartridges, or is this actually a genius business move?
If we look closely at the data and consumer behavior, it is a brilliant strategic maneuver. In a world where everyone else zigged toward digital, Nintendo zagged.
Right.
By committing to physical media, which is fully expected to carry over to the Switch 2 in late 2026 or early 2027, Nintendo becomes the only physical option in the mainstream console space. They're creating an artificial scarcity of physical media.
And they entirely corner the secondhand market.
Precisely. Nintendo games already retain 50 to 70% of their value years after release on the used market. By being the last fortress of physical gaming, they capture the collectors.
And families, right?
Yes, families who want to share a single game cartridge between three kids' consoles. They capture players in rural areas with severe data caps who physically cannot download a 100-gigabyte file. By serving these neglected demographics, that unique market position could generate billions in sheer customer loyalty.
It's the ultimate contrarian play, but this industry-wide push by everyone else to make everything digital, frictionless, and license-based leads us perfectly into the other side of this shift. We're voluntarily giving up physical keys for digital tokens, and that brings us to the terrifying security news regarding the Toddycat hacking group.
Yeah, this is where things get really dark.
Because just like corporate walled gardens are failing in gaming, our personal digital walled gardens are being bypassed completely.
This raises such an important question about the dark side of digital convenience and how fragile our underlying infrastructure actually is.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Standard password hygiene is becoming totally useless against the malware Toddycat developed, which is called Umbri.
Yes, Umbri.
Umbri targets corporate and government Gmail accounts by exploiting Oath 2.0 and Google APIs. And the craziest part, it doesn't even want your password. It steals your OAuth tokens.
For those who might not be familiar with the exact mechanism, OAuth tokens are essentially the temporary access keys stored in your browser when you let a third-party app connect to your account.
Like when you click login with Google on a random website?
Exactly. It was originally designed to be a more secure protocol, so you didn't have to hand out your actual master password to every single calendar app or email client you use.
The way I think about OFA is like giving a valet a special key to your car. The valet key only lets them drive the car 5 miles per hour, and it won't open the trunk or the glove box. It's safer than giving them your actual house keys on the same key ring.
That's a great way to picture it.
But what this Umbri malware does is essentially sneak into the valet stand and make a permanent, invisible copy of that valet key. Once the hackers have it, they bypass the login screen entirely.
Yep, they just walk right past the front door.
They use legitimate Google Application Programming Interfaces APIs to read, download, and send emails completely undetected. They are already inside the car.
And because they are using legitimate APIs with a valid token, the malware disguises its activity as a normal authorized application request. The system sees no malicious login attempt.
Which means changing your password does absolutely nothing. It doesn't kick the hackers out because they aren't using your password. If changing my password doesn't work, how on earth do I protect myself from this?
Well, you actually have to go into the back end of your account permissions, specifically myaccount.google.com/permissions. And manually sever the API access.
So you have to individually review and revoke every single third-party app you don't recognize.
Exactly. That manual revocation is the first crucial step. The second step is upgrading your two-factor authentication.
Right, but we need to be really specific here because not all 2FA is created equal anymore.
No, it definitely isn't.
Using SMS text messages for your 2FA is fundamentally compromised because of SIM swapping attacks. Hackers trick your telecom provider into porting your phone number to their own device, so they intercept the text message before you ever even see it.
Which is why you have to use an app-based authenticator like Authy or Google Authenticator.
Or better yet, move to a physical hardware key like a YubiKey or a Google Titan, which are essentially impossible to phish remotely.
The irony there is inescapable, isn't it? The ultimate protection against this cutting-edge digital token theft is retreating to a literal physical piece of hardware you hold in your hand.
It's exactly like Nintendo with their physical game cartridges. Physical presence is becoming the ultimate security measure in a purely digital world.
It really is.
But let's scale this threat up, because if sophisticated groups like Tottycat can completely bypass the security of billion-dollar tech giants like Google just to spy on corporate accounts, what happens when they target the very organizations meant to protect our national security?
This is where the implications move from corporate espionage to global stability.
According to TechCrunch and our sources, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's information sharing network was just hacked. This is the central nervous system used to distribute highly sensitive threat intelligence between the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA.
And when an adversary gets into that system, they don't just steal data. They get to see exactly what the U.S. government knows about them.
Wow, yeah.
They see what operations are being planned, and most importantly, they see exactly where the government's blind spots are.
And this is part of a deeply concerning historical pattern. We saw the massive SolarWinds attack in 2020 that compromised numerous federal agencies by poisoning a software update. We saw the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack in 2021 that literally disrupted physical critical infrastructure across the East Coast.
The vulnerabilities in these digital networks are persistent, and they have real-world kinetic consequences.
Now, there is an ongoing debate right now in the sources where critics point out that the U.S. government spends billions and billions of dollars on traditional military weapons, tanks, jets, kinetic warfare, while severely underfunding cybersecurity infrastructure. And, you know, regardless of where you stand on how a government should allocate its defense budget, the reality from the data is that the battlefield has clearly shifted to the digital realm.
Absolutely. Yeah. But responding to these attacks is a strategic nightmare because of the attribution problem.
What do you mean by that?
Well, cyber attackers don't just launch an attack from a single location. They route their signal through multiple compromised servers across different countries, and they use false flags like leaving code snippets in another language to frame other hacking groups.
Oh, wow. So they make it look like someone else did it.
Exactly. That makes a proportional military or diplomatic response extremely difficult. If you hit back at the wrong target based on a false flag, you could inadvertently start a new geopolitical conflict.
It is the fog of war, but entirely digital and instantaneous. So if the DHS, the literal Department of Homeland Security, with the combined intelligence of the FBI, CIA, and NSA, can't protect its own intel sharing network from being breached, what chance do regular businesses or the rest of us have? I mean, it proves the traditional walled garden is dead. The fortress metaphor we used at the beginning is obsolete.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it signals that a fundamental paradigm shift in how we architect systems is necessary. For decades, cybersecurity has been about building a taller, thicker wall around the perimeter.
But the wall doesn't work anymore.
Right. The reality today is that the wall will be breached, period. Security can no longer be solely about prevention. It has to be about employing what's called a zero-trust architecture.
Which means you don't inherently trust anyone or anything, even if they're already inside the network. Instead of just having a moat around the castle, it's like putting a biometric lock on every single door, every single drawer, and every single file cabinet inside the house.
Precisely. You design the system assuming the attackers are already inside the network. Zero trust requires continuous verification of every user and device, compartmentalizing access so that a breach in one area doesn't grant access to the whole system.
You minimize the blast radius.
Exactly. And on a geopolitical level, dealing with these threats requires entirely new international norms for cyber warfare. We essentially need a digital Geneva Convention to establish what targets like civilian infrastructure or healthcare networks are off limits and how nations should behave in cyberspace.
Okay, let's bring this all together. From the video game industry to the highest levels of national security, the old ways of doing things are dead. Hardcore console exclusivity. It's gone. The economics of building $150 million games simply don't support locking a game to a single piece of hardware anymore.
No, the math just isn't there.
Physical games. They are on life support, with Nintendo standing as the calculated last holdout. And traditional password security. It is no longer enough to keep your digital life safe against token-stealing malware that bypasses the login screen entirely.
The landscape is completely shifted beneath our feet. The digital walls we relied on have become porous.
So, some actionable advice for you listening. Please, go check your Google account permissions today. Revoke API access to apps you don't need or recognize. Upgrade your security by getting an app-based authenticator. Or better yet, a hardware key. And, you know, if you are stressing about dropping $700 on a new console right now, Maybe just be patient. The market is in total chaos, and rushing in to buy premium hardware in a shifting landscape might not be the best move for your wallet.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, looking at all these disparate shifts together. We've spent this entire deep dive looking at how we are actively trading ownership for digital access.
Right.
Whether that's renting digital games instead of owning physical discs, or relying on invisible oath tokens instead of holding physical security keys. But as these digital networks become both exponentially more expensive to access and simultaneously more vulnerable to catastrophic breaches, we have to ask ourselves something. Are we moving toward a future where true ownership of our entertainment, our personal data, and our digital identities becomes a physical luxury that only a privileged few can afford to keep strictly offline?
Wow. That is a heavy, necessary question. Are we just renting our lives from the digital landlord? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital walls around you, because as we learned today, the fortress is empty and the gates are wide open. Until next time.